Herzlich willkommen an der Hydrogen Bar. Wir freuen uns, dass ihr wieder eingeschaltet habt für eine neue Folge eures Lieblingspodcasts aus der schönen Welt des Wasserstoffs. And once again, I'm switching to English because once again we have a very special guest here today. Johannes, we have a guest which has appeared on the show for quite a couple of times already. I think four or five times.
Every year he comes back.
Yeah.
So hello everyone and a very warm welcome to Colin Bendick Daniels.
Hi Colin.
Hi Colin.
Hi.
Very warm welcome. Hey, sent across the Atlantic.
Yeah.
To the other side of the world.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this time I think it's the first time I'm logging in or attending the Hydrogen Bar from across the pond. Every other time I was in Europe when we did this, but this is the first time I'm back over in North America.
Yeah, and the reason for that is that you are located in Houston, Texas now. I think you have been there for a couple of months now, right?
Yeah, I've been here for about 3 months. Reason for my relocation was work related. I was offered a position over here, and I decided what better time to move to Houston than right now.
Exactly. What better time to move to the US? And that is, of course, the will be one of the contents, one of the topics of our podcast episode today. We want to speak about the situation in North America in general regarding hydrogen, and of course in the USA and in Canada especially. Most of our listeners will know you, will remember you, because as Johannes has said, you have been here on the show quite a couple of times already, and you have given us your news and updates about the situation with hydrogen in Canada. And since now you are located in the United States, of course, it makes a lot of sense to speak about the United States as well.
Yeah, exactly. And we want to start directly with, getting your feel. How is the market there? What is the situation? Like, you hear that Donald Trump is not necessarily in favor for the renewable energy and stuff like this, but he's more into this drilling of oil.
Yeah.
Do you notice it? Do you see a difference, especially now where you they're locally kind of involved in this whole ecosystem?
Yeah, so I think if you compare the United States and Canada, for example, as to sort of the two focus countries of the podcast today, I mean, they couldn't be more different with respect to the hydrogen industry. I think the Canadian hydrogen industry is just kind of putting along like it's been for the last, five, 6 years or so. And mirrors much more the European hydrogen industry. With respect to the United States, yes, of course, we've heard a lot of the new administration here trying to get away from sort of these hydrogen or energy transition projects. But what I have to say is, now that I'm in Texas, what you really notice here is, yes, of course, Texas is oil and gas heavy, but it happens to be also the energy transition leader in the United States. So, when you look at a microscope, at Texas specifically, or even the Gulf Coast, what you see here is an immense amount of renewables that have already been built and a large amount of investment still going towards renewable power, being, solar, wind, grid batteries, and other things. And, although Texas is fortunate to be sort of a very rich in energy, whether it be oil and gas or renewables, what we've seen here specifically is Texas being or positioning itself as sort of the energy transition leader in the U.S. Whether or not the administration sees it that way or not, those are just the facts. Even since 2022, I believe over $60 billion of investment U.S. dollars of investment into the clean energy sector have taken place here in Texas. And although oftentimes you'll think of California as the leader if you look at sort of the queue of projects looking to come online and looking to connect to the electrical grid, the majority of them, I think almost 75% of them, are renewable energy projects. And and actually Texas, you know, kind of dwarfs the next two largest states, which happen to be California and Arizona, in terms of projects coming online. So, I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. I think, you know, of course, the momentum we saw from the Inflation Reduction Act has subsided somewhat. But, you know, if you look in a little bit more detail, a lot of the tax credits that existed in the Inflation Reduction Act, they weren't all altogether removed in the one big, beautiful bill. They were shortened. And in the case of carbon capture, they're actually, they remain in place. And so, you know, it depends on what type of project you're looking at. But all in all, I think Trump's and the administration's sort of goal of energy dominance, as they sometimes put it, you know, it kind of lends a hand to the energy transition.
So what you also are experiencing in the United States at the moment, I guess, is, of course, this huge surging and this huge, huge, like, increase in power demand, especially coming, of course, from data centers for artificial intelligence calculations. So how do you see the role of, like hydrogen and other low carbon technologies in this? Are they contributing, so technologies like carbon capture and storage as well? Or is this increase in power demand so big and so high that it's just not enough?
Yeah, so I think specifically hydrogen, I think I would look at it like this. These data centers, I mean, if you look at any kind of forecast in terms of power consumption growth over the next 3 to 5 years, it's anywhere between, you know, 1.5 to 4% per year, right? So it depends on obviously which forecast you're looking at. But regardless, it's a massive amount of energy that'll be required for these data centers. And the issue in the U.S. is that the electrical grid cannot handle it, handle this sort of increase, especially this rapid increase on its own. So a lot of these data centers are building their own power plants. And the leading sort of, I guess, source of power, or, you know, the most popular right now is natural gas, you know, fired power plants. And there are certain projects, you know, there's one up in Indiana, I believe, where, you know, they plan, or Wyoming, sorry, it's Wyoming, they plan to build, you know, a power plant that can power this particular plant, which requires, I think, up to 8 gigawatts of power, which is more than the entire state of Wyoming, I read, even requires. So, you know, we're talking about massive amounts of power that are, and electricity that are needed. And, you know, you see oftentimes, you know, I think Meta and Google have other plants that are coupled with geothermal power, which is tends to be one that's it's very bipartisan. You know, both parties are kind of in support of it. So what I'm getting at here is that, you know, whether hydrogen specifically will play a role here, I think this increase in power demand and this rapid increase in it really kind of illustrates any and all types of power are welcomed. And, you know, I mentioned previously or earlier that the One Big Beautiful Bill Act incentivizes or supports still CO2 capture. So what this enables is that a lot of these power plants include carbon capture technology. And what actually also helps is that there is, you know, specifically in certain regions like Texas and the Gulf Coast and other places in the U.S., already CO2 pipelines available. And in Texas specifically, there is also an incentive for storage of CO2 underground, or if it's used to produce other, you know, byproducts, say sustainable aviation fuels, or other products that you can create using this captured CO2. So, you know, the business case makes sense, but it also goes, you know, in hand in hand with the power demand that these massive data centers require. So, you know, there's sort of a mixture of energy sources or power sources that are being considered, a lot of which are somewhat related to renewables or the energy transition. Nuclear is often one that's associated with these data centers. And, you know, for these large data centers, they are trying to go online as quickly as possible. So, you know, it's sometimes quicker to build your own power plants or use renewables, for example, to get the electricity you need quicker than it is to build, you know, or connect to the electrical grid that exists now, which requires, you know, permitting and other, you know, documentation to get linked up. So, yeah, what you see is this really kind of lends a hand to the energy transition, whether the current administration likes it or not. And, you know, a lot of these companies that are building these data centers also are committed to decarbonization. So, you know, whether that be using CCUS or geothermal or even hydrogen in the future, this signals a positive growth for the energy transition. And, you know, that's kind of the direction that we see, that I see, at least here in the US.
Mm. Do you see that hydrogen is playing a role there? I mean, you said it is like really a fast-paced environment and you need energy sources as soon as possible. Could imagine that with hydrogen, you are kind of so early in the development phase in a lot of kind of areas that it might just not be fast enough compared to kind of the proven photovoltaic or proven wind or proven natural gas route.
Yeah. I think what you see here, I mean, I've worked on a lot of hydrogen projects in the US, all blue hydrogen projects, and all or most at least in the Gulf Coast region. So what these projects have been built for are, you know, the hard to abate sectors or for transports to other countries like in Europe, for example, that require the hydrogen as either blue hydrogen or blue ammonia. So I think hydrogen will still be used, at least in the near future, for these types of applications or even fertilizer production. For example, I worked on a project recently in Indiana that plans to produce blue ammonia. And this is also supported by the 45Q tax incentive. So I still think that, you know, hydrogen in the US is a very, it's still, a, you know, I would say it's still a niche industry and will be used for these targeted industries, or these targeted uses. In terms of the actual data center, I think, you know, like I mentioned before, all of the above approach kind of lends a hand to, you know, even hydrogen projects. I think obviously, firstly, you'll see the quickest types of power, you know, direct electricity from solar, wind, geothermal, nuclear, what have you, probably be the forefront or the front runners for these data centers. But I think long term, you know, where, let's say there's a project, a hydrogen production project that exists and there's existing infrastructure like there is in Texas or Louisiana or the Gulf Coast region, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, data centers that are popping up, you know, use the infrastructure that exists and uses, let's say, you know, hydrogen as a fuel source moving forward. One thing you got to keep in mind about the data centers is that they require like a base load power because they're always running. So, I mean, if you're using renewables, that's one of, you know, the big knocks on renewables is the intermittent power service that they supply. But as we know here at the hydrogen bar, hydrogen is a great fuel storage mechanism. You know, if the sun is shining too much or the wind is blowing too much, then that tends to be curtailed. Or you can produce hydrogen, which can be stored for, you know, times where the sun isn't shining, the wind isn't blowing. So that kind of lends itself to a way of supporting, you know, renewables and the data centers when as a base load power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what are the biggest risks and uncertainties that you are seeing regarding the further development of hydrogen in North America?
I think they're the same risks as everywhere in the world, maybe a bit more pronounced here in the US. You know, policy uncertainty, you know, the administrative support is obviously in the US. It looks a bit different than it does elsewhere in Europe or in Canada. I think, you know, the US is heavily focused on energy dominance, and they don't really, you know, they don't really care how they get there. It's just important to get there. In Canada, I think Canada is very, you know, dependent on other countries and you know, other continents for the offtake of their hydrogen. So, you know, I looked into some of the projects we've spoken about in the past on in Atlantic Canada. You know, the Everwinds, I believe, is the one, the name of the one end user company that is building a hydrogen project for the hydrogen corridor between Germany and Canada. And I've, you know, that I think we laughed about it a couple of years ago because they said in 2025 the first shipments are to go over to Germany. I mean, it's 2026 and they haven't even broken ground yet. And that's it was, you know, it was pretty obvious, you know, given the timeline, the very ambitious timeline they gave. But it seems like the support is still there. It's just, you know, it's really the commercial viability that is struggling to get these projects, you know, built. So, you know, once the offtake agreements are in place, I think you'll see that move forward. But Canada specifically, obviously, it's a very large country. You can't really ship or, you know, there isn't the infrastructure there to use the green hydrogen or ammonia within the country to at least a large scale. So, you know, those projects specifically on the east coast of Canada, they're very dependent on the way things move forward in Europe. And we've also talked about blue hydrogen production in other parts of Canada, like in Alberta. And, you know, we have some, you know, good success stories there, projects that are actually being built. The, you know, the Air Products project in Edmonton is being built. It's, I believe, to be completed next year. The Linde Dow Path to Zero project is also one that's going forward. So, you know, it's not all, you know, gray and gloomy in Canada, but yeah, it's, you know, it's very dependent on other countries. The Carney administration in Canada recently, you know, approved the C5 bill, which is an act to, or a bill to basically accelerate projects of national importance, is what they call them. So that also includes energy projects. And you know, that'll help hydrogen energy transition projects with respect to permitting and, you know, government support, but it still doesn't solve the commercial viability problem that a lot of hydrogen projects have. So yeah, I think it's still a very complex situation in North America. Obviously, like I mentioned at the start, Canada and US couldn't be any more different, but yeah, I think, you know, there's, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the US with the administration and you know, the midterms coming up. So there's a good chance that things change in the near future again. But I you know, one thing I say at my company or internally as well is that, you know, the energy transition, these types of projects, they're not going anywhere. You can just see by the fact of how much is being invested into these types of projects without government support. And I think now, you know, with the price of renewables coming down so much, you know, it's and being cost competitive with oil and gas and coal and other types of fuel sources, you know, I expect to see, whether it's a bit, you know, delayed or a bit slowed down, I expect to see a ramp up and a steady growth in the near future.
So do we see then real progress in terms of the usage of hydrogen in the US? We talk now about kind of projects to produce hydrogen, but I mean, this is always the chicken and egg problem, right? And I guess in the US and in Canada, you have the chicken and egg problem as everywhere else on the planet.
Definitely. I think, like what I mentioned earlier, the main use of this low carbon hydrogen, if we want to call it that, is going to be for, you know, industrial purposes. The hard to abate sector, you know, fertilizers, chemicals, steel, etc. And that'll be the primary source of this type of hydrogen moving forward. Maybe in the US, you know, the next step will be to use it as a fuel for the data centers, who knows. But, you know, I think the hydrogen market globally really still needs to establish itself. And I think, you know, the supply is growing. I think it's, you know, you could even argue that the supply is there. It's just, you know, the companies that want to buy the hydrogen, you know, I think they need to assess whether they want to take that step or not. I mean, a lot of you know, a lot of large companies are very risk averse, but you do see certain companies like Air Products, like Air Liquide, Linde, and others, you know, moving forward with their projects, regardless of sort of what other companies are doing. I think that needs to happen more and more. We've spoken about the NEOM project in the past. That one's almost, I think, almost complete.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the more lighthouse projects you see like that, the more projects that actually start producing low carbon hydrogen that start signing offtake agreements, I think this will really kind of calm the nerves of other companies to do the same and to follow that path. But yeah, obviously with everything that's going on in the world right now, geopolitically, I mean, the one could argue, you know, the shift has gone towards other priorities. But on the other hand, I think energy security is more relevant than ever. And, you know, one war after the other, it seems like right now has really kind of showed that a lot of countries want to, you know, be energy independent. And it doesn't matter, you know, where you're located in the world, energy independence is you know, achievable if you use renewables because, you know, that they exist, you know, most parts of the world. You know, however, you know, there's still a, you know, amount of dependence that you'll have if you're in countries, you know, that don't have as much sun, but, you know, those certain countries tend to have more wind, so, or geothermal. So I think, you know, overall, the hydrogen industry is, you know, still at the beginning phases, unfortunately, but yeah, I think it's just a matter of time. If you look at solar, you know, that's another industry that took a while to get going. And once it did, it's I think it's one of the leading, you know, sources of electricity worldwide now. I mean, you look at China. China is another country that, you know, that really invested, I think, almost $1 trillion into the renewable energy sector and has really, you know, seen the fruits of their labor, so to speak, with the war in Iran. I think they're, you know, oil and gas dependent on the Strait of Hormuz, but, you know, given that they've invested so much in clean energy, they're able to, you know, bear the brunt of the war by, you know, tapping into the renewable resources. So it's a long-winded way to say I think we are moving in the right direction, perhaps a bit more slowly than we had initially anticipated. Yeah.
More slowly than anticipated, but when hydrogen will be finally running, what technology, which field of application are you expecting to scale first in North America? So will it be fuels for export, like we discussed a couple of minutes ago, for like exporting ammonia or a liquid hydrogen or even gaseous hydrogen to Europe? Or do you think another field of application, field of technology will emerge first?
I mean, you know, I'm no fortune teller, but I can, you know, from what I can tell, the industries that need hydrogen will be the first ones to use low carbon hydrogen, be it, you know, chemicals, fertilizers. These types of industries over here in the US specifically and in Canada, you know, they still use natural gas to produce their hydrogen. But if the, you know, the support mechanisms for carbon capture still exist, I think there's a very good case to be made. Well, why don't we, you know, add this type of technology to it? You know, we'll receive not only incentives for capturing the CO2, but if we use that CO2 for other products, you know, basically they'll receive even more financial support to do so. So I think that kind of expands sort of the business case. It expands sort of the product range a specific company can have. And, you know, at the end of the day, it probably, you know, diversifies their portfolio to a degree. So I think that'll be the main use of hydrogen in the near future, followed perhaps by export, depending on where the hydrogen is being produced in North America. It's on, you know, the East Coast or, you know, on the Gulf Coast here. The shipping routes already exist for, let's say, blue ammonia or green ammonia. So yeah, I think it'll be the hard to abate sectors, followed by export to countries that require the fuel because they can't make it themselves, at least not to the degree that North America can.
Mm-hmm. Good. It's very interesting and stresses that we need to continue following up with you year after year to check in with the progress that is going on there in the American continent.
Yeah.
As you can tell, I'm still very heavily involved in it, and it just seems to be, you know, getting more and more complex in terms of, or diverse, I guess, and is the better word, in terms of the types of energy sources and the types of, you know, energy pathways that can be used. And yeah, I think the AI boom is really, you know, an additional sort of way to move the needle, and enzyme, as it were, to as a catalyst to push these types of energy projects forward. So yeah, I'm very excited to be involved in it and keep an eye on it, because it's something I find, you know, not only very interesting but crucial to the energy system or ecosystem moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you very much for all these insights. And yeah, as I said, we're curious to see more about this ecosystem. I mean, it is still kind of the Western world, and I guess in the US there are a lot of similarities to what's happening or what needs to happen here in Europe. So it's definitely like probably more close than, for example, the development that is happening in China. So therefore, yeah, big thank you. I don't know. Do you have anything else you would like to share before we let you go?
No, I think maybe just to reiterate, I think it's great that you guys are, you know, doing this podcast. It's one of, I mean, very few that I've been able to find that, you know, gives sort of an update on the state of affairs in the hydrogen space. Yeah, so, you know, from my end, please keep doing what you're doing. I think it's important that, you know, even now with a bit of, let's say, the hype dissipated, it's important to keep pushing forward, because I don't think that this industry is going anywhere. I don't think that the energy transition is going to stop anytime soon. I think the business case is too strong. I think there's, you know, countless examples worldwide that you can look at to really, you know, support that argument. So, you know, I'll be happy to join, you know, every time you invite me on. And
yeah,
perhaps next time I'll do it again in German, so that I don't lose my German.
All right. Yeah, it's always great to have you here, Colin. So we are really looking forward for your update for 2027. So our listeners can rest assured that you will be back on the Hydrogen Power podcast for today. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I hope you have a nice, warm, sunny day over in Houston. I think you will have, probably.
Yeah.
And thank you very much once again. For all our listeners, please look up our website, hydrogenbar.de, where you can find more information about the podcast and about the episode of today. Of course, you can also use the contact form that you will find on the website if you want to reach out to us, or if you want to reach out to Colin. So you can also use the contact form and write an email to us at contact@hydrogenbar.de. And if the message is intended to reach Colin, we will forward it to him. And I think that's it for the episode of this week. We are happy that you have listened to us once again, and would also be very happy if you would be listening to us next Wednesday for the next episode once again. Thank you very much.
Maybe just one big shout out to men's Canadian men's soccer team
for
advancing to round 16. We're very excited and proud that that they were able to pull that off. So
big shout out. So we are recording this episode on the day after the win against South Africa. I was not impressed by the South African team, to be honest. But
we'll take what we can.
Absolutely.
Now Canada plays their next game in Houston. So I'll be
watching
intently, but it'll be against Morocco or the Netherlands. So I think that was our World Cup right there.
But that will be another story. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Then I hope you can enjoy the game then in Houston. And all the best across the pond to you. And dear listeners, have a nice week ahead of you.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thanks, guys.